You're listening to episode 6 of the Impact Alumni Podcast. Today is June 30th, 2009. Hello and welcome into the show. We got a great show lined up for you. We have an interview to bring to you with Mike Worley. Mike is the Executive Director for Regional Development at Washington University in St. Louis, and we talk about, among other things, the economy and how it's impacting fundraising and alumni relations participation. We talk about some upcoming projects that we're working on. So I look forward to bringing my talk with Mike to you. It has been a while since I've done a podcast. I apologize for that, but life happens, and you just got to roll with the punches. But I'm excited to bring this interview to you. You can download the Impact Alumni Podcast at the iTunes Music Center. You could also follow us on Facebook. Go to Facebook.com and search for Impact Alumni. You can join the Impact Alumni group on Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter. That's twitter.com/impactalumni. Thanks for tuning in to the podcast. As always, I'd love for you to send feedback. You can send that directly to me at paul.clifford@alumnipodcast.com. That's paul.clifford@alumnipodcast.com. And if you're looking for show notes, you can visit the Impact Alumni Podcast at www.alumnipodcast.com. That's alumnipodcast.com. And now, our interview with Mike Worley. Well, and welcome to the Impact Alumni Podcast. I'm Paul Clifford, and I'm joined today by Mike Worley. Mike is the Executive Director for Regional Programs at Washington University in St. Louis. Welcome to the podcast, Mike.
Thanks, Paul. Great to be here today.
Well, Mike, I think we should spend maybe the next 10 to 15 minutes, and let's talk about the current economy and about collaboration in higher education. Just to give our listeners a little bit of a background on you, Mike has spent most of his career, or I guess we'll say maybe the first two-thirds of your career in the alumni relations business at Ohio University, which was his alma mater. And then he continued his career in advancement in fundraising at Washington University in St. Louis. And here at East Carolina University, we were colleagues for a while and prior to his return back to Washington University in St. Louis. So Mike's a good guy to talk about collaboration with because he brings a great global perspective. But I first want to touch on the economy. You know, you're going out there and you're raising money for WashU. Talk about how the economy has changed your strategies.
Well, you know, certainly we are looking at things very differently than we were, I guess, to September 15th, which was the day that Lehman closed its doors. You know, I am working on, you know, it's not to say that we're not always doing stewardship and we're not always, you know, visiting with our alumni, but, you know, a great deal more of that and letting them, you know, sending the message that letting them know that we're here in good times and bad times. And, you know, I know, you know, one specific example, you know, we had an event last October and I called some of our alumni and, you know, just invited them to the event, you know, nothing more, nothing less, but just, you know, left them a message or talked to them and just said, wanted to let you know about this event. This is an extra way to reach out to them.
So, Mike, tell people a little bit about your shop. It's you see a number of institutions starting to fundraise on a regional basis, and although you are based in St. Louis, you spend an awful lot of time in New York City, which is the area of the country that you cover for WashU. Talk a little bit about your setup there in your development office and why you choose to go at this from a regional perspective as opposed to other types of options.
Well, I know our history of our university plays a little bit of role in that, you know, 40 years ago, most of our students were from the region and from St. Louis, and we had some pipelines into some other cities. But fast forward to today, We're one of the most geographically diverse institutions in the country, and that 65% of our student body comes from more than 500 miles away. So we've had a complete reversal in 40 years, more or less. And, in the early 90s, we had these critical masses developing in different parts of the country, yet we still had a large population in St. Louis to keep school directors busy. So that's really the way that I understand the history of it. Obviously, that was before my time, the impetus for the regional program starting. I know that the University of Michigan Alumni Association, almost in the same dates as when they had hired Anderson Consulting to re-examine how they do business. And I think one of the results, if I remember correctly from a case presentation many, many moons ago, that they essentially came up with the same model for their alumni association, sending people out to these areas of critical mass and catering to them. So, that's how ours started. And I know, obviously there's many regional gift programs now, and I know that different people approach it different ways, whether they're more of a, exploratory type role, discovering potential gift candidates to more of a, in the region, like our program, and the major gift officer for the region.
It's an interesting setup, and I think you're right on target with the analysis that happened at the University of Michigan also. We're talking with Mike Worley, and Mike is the Executive Director of Regional Programs at Washington University in St. Louis. So let's take another step backwards, Mike, if you'll indulge me, and talk about, you started your career in advancement working for Ralph Amos at Ohio University and at their Alumni Association. Talk about, your time at Ohio U, and specifically, a lot of folks who work in alumni relations see development as the next step. What led you to begin to pursue or think about pursuing a career on the fundraising side as opposed to on the relationship development side?
Sure. I was very, very, very lucky to have worked for my first boss to be Ralph Amos at the Alumni Association. There's probably not a whole lot of folks that are more creative than Ralph. So I was really lucky to have that as a start. To give you a bit of more history, I'd started in athletics at Ohio in 1989. Date myself. And and then actually left the university for a couple of years in sales, and then came back to the station. But one of the things is I that was very fortuitous because it turned out to be a calling for me for advancement. But one of the things that when I was looking at my career early on and decided yes, this is a calling, and yes, I want to stay in advancement was at that time I wanted to be a VP. And looking at all the VPs across the country, certainly one can quickly and anecdotally tell that most of the VPs come from the fundraising side. And so I knew early on that if I wanted to be a VP at some point, I was going to have to make that leap. And for me, and I'm not necessarily sure I want to be a VP anymore, that's how that came about. But for me, just my personality style. I like the tangibility and the black and white part of fundraising. That's not for everybody. I like it. And I also like, being able to help our alumni at the institutions that I've worked at and their dreams come true. I know that sounds a little cliche, but that's really what happens.
Absolutely. And you talk about, you like the challenge and you like the tangibles, and you like that at the end of the day you have a bottom line that you could point to. Oftentimes folks in alumni relations, I hear them at conferences, and they will talk about development being the dark side, and I've heard that now throughout my 13 years in the profession, and I really think you and I share a perspective that that attitude really needs to shift, and it needs to shift quickly, or else we're going to be the alumni associations will be relegated to the sidelines of major university decisions. We need to be seen as a partner in the development process. So let's transition our conversation a little bit into collaboration, and tell me what your thoughts are on the topic of the Alumni Association as part of the major gift process.
Absolutely. I can give a couple examples, but you know, and backing up to your original comment, I do agree that we professionals on both sides need to make sure that we're thinking together and be more collaborative in the because for an alumnus or alumna, you know, their relationship with the university is lifelong, and from the time that they're admitted as a student till the time that you know, they make that ultimate gift, you know, whether that's, 30 years or 60. And the Alumni Association obviously plays a critical role in that, especially in the beginning, whether it's chapter events, whether it's the magazine, and those types of touches that happen early on, because it's, you know, there's not very many gift officers that are going to tell you that they walked in and got a $100,000 check. And I think Indiana University Center of Philanthropy, you know, in their Bank of America study, and don't maybe I shouldn't quote this because I don't remember the exact number, but I think it was 12 annual gifts before a major gift. They defined as $25,000. But it, you know, whatever the criteria, it goes to show you that that relationship takes a long time, and there are a lot of touches that happen, you know, in that period, and I'd be willing to bet that probably more of them are from the Alumni Association than anywhere else. So it is a very critical role, and you know, and I think the better development officers know that, and I think the better Alumni Association officers know that.
Absolutely. So give some examples of good collaborations that you've been a part of. I know you've shared a couple stories with me personally of where you've worked with folks on the alumni relations side to really create some good synergies on behalf of Washington University.
Well, I certainly can talk about as well, but I think that, you know, backing up to the economy a little bit, I think this is the perfect time to look at ways to collaborate, because when you you know, you can involve more stakeholders to help with your budget. You know, if the Alumni Association is participating and the president's office is participating and maybe one of the schools or so forth, you know, the more people that you have involved, obviously the better that your budget can be.
Absolutely. And I think that's an important point to echo. And boy, I appreciate your perspective on collaboration during tough times. It seems to me all too often that when times get tougher, people retreat back into silos as opposed to go out and find others to help them. You know, when times are tough, you know, I've seen development officers begin to mark territory where in good times they may have been more collaborative and sharing. Now they seem to retreat into silos. So your perspective on during good and bad times, collaboration helps everybody is a perspective that I greatly appreciate.
Well, I know that you know, if you involve more people, it's going to save time. And as I mentioned before, you're going to have a bigger budget. But it also allows you, I think, to be more focused. It allows for more variety of thought, you know, bringing more people to the table. Obviously, there might be at some point a limit to that. I think it allows for better execution because you have more people involved. And obviously, there's going to be a certain amount of camaraderie built, and getting buy-in to your program, whether it's Alumni Association or development or whomever the stakeholders are. And then I think ultimately, you know, one of the best outcomes is retention of your staff, because if your staff has more time, you know, and all the other things that I mentioned, they're going to be happier employees, and we know that happy employees stay longer. And again, it's a perfect, you know, another way to diversify your career and get other experience, which I think is, you know, terribly important. And I think, you know, one of my first fundraising experiences was through a collaborative event at Ohio many years ago.
Absolutely. Again, Yeah,
I was going to say, the more specific examples of one of the things I know just recently, you know, and I cover New York City for Washington University, but I can tell you, you know, we have two of them coming that I know. I'm working with our Elliott Society, which is our annual fund society, that we're both sharing responsibility for. We're sharing budgets, we're sharing the RSVPs, everything right down the line. And I know ultimately that's going to be a better experience for our volunteers and our donors in that area. And then additionally, even just last week, just because of my alumni experience, the alumni representative for New York wasn't able to be in New York for their monthly meeting, so I attended the meeting and reported back to her. You know, and again, that's a trip that she didn't have to make, so there's a savings on a budget and savings on her time, and I happen to be there.
Mike, can you talk a little bit about, again, focusing on the economy and not necessarily the negative of what a down economy brings, but I also think that there's an upside when the economy slumps like this, and that it really forces us to, again, to steal your word, to focus on what's important now, what's most important. I also think it gives us the opportunity to, one, we are being forced to cut budgets and really take a look at how we're spending our resources as they continue to be limited. But I also think it gives us an opportunity to, again, refocus our programs, maybe cut some fat of, you know, maybe programs that aren't necessarily as effective as they should be, and yet we continue to allow them to live. And so I guess my question to you is, what have you all looked at this as an opportunity to reevaluate your program in any way?
Obviously, this is the worst financial in my career in advancement. This is the worst financial downturn. We've had a couple others where we've really reexamined. I would say at this juncture, our focus has been a little bit more from the collaborative side of things and looking at those things that we can do together and do better. We haven't got to the point where we're saying, you know, which of these events are we not going to do next year? You know, imagine if things don't turn around, that may be down the pike. Now, I know that some of my colleagues in some other states that have had some greater reductions certainly have gotten to that point. And as a, you know, in the past, I've been to that point as well, too. It does allow you, I think, to arm, you know, to, we all have those sacred cows. I can think of about a half a dozen. But right. It is a time that you're able to look at that and say, you know, is this the best use of our resources? Are we connecting with the most alumni? You know, are we you can ask some great questions. And, you know, a former colleague of mine and a great friend to this day, I love her quote. She said, you know, she said, if you went to a senior and asked them what they thought the alumni association was going to be, you know, her response was, you know, do you think that seniors and college response would be, yes, it's going to be an alumni event at a baseball stadium, you know, featuring Gold Star Chili or something like that 20 years from now? The answer is probably no. They're probably thinking in more in terms of networking, job placement, and things of that nature.
Absolutely. You know, I think all too often, and, you know, we've mentioned the name Ralph Amos, and you're listening to the Impact Alumni Podcast, and we're joined today by Mike Worley, and Mike is the Executive Director of Regional Programs at Washington University in St. Louis. But, you know, to bring up Ralph Amos's name, you know, he's so smart about the way he thinks about our profession. We were recently together, and he made the comment to me that, you know, Paul, do you think the best way to develop alumni programs is by people who work in alumni relations getting together to discuss what might be the best program to deliver to our alumni? Or do you think the best way would be what you're just suggesting that your colleague mentioned to you is, you know, do your approach and start at the alumnus and work your way back to develop a program. So do you look at the expectations that alumni have and work your way back? I think if we took Ralph's advice and worked from that perspective back in developing our programs, I don't think you would see, you know, world famous chili being shipped all around the world, and just because alumni from your institution tend to have an affinity to that while they were on campus, or in our case, it's, you know, Eastern North Carolina barbecue, and, you know, some of the Big Ten schools will ship the ice cream that's produced on their campus all over the world. I really think that all too often, because so many of us are type A, that we develop programs based on our commonalities and not necessarily on the needs of the alumni from the individual perspective. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I remember one of, you know, there's probably in all of our careers, there's a few really aha moments. And one of them for me was when I was, and I'm not putting a plug in, but I think I have to bring up their name to share with you what I'm, Rob Schoss and the Performance Enhancement Group, their survey. So I bring that up for two reasons. One, you know, if there's something that could be critical of our profession about, and I think most people would say this, is that we often plan in a vacuum. And two, is that we, you know, we should survey our alumni. And they're there, and they usually will talk to you about their wants and needs. So I remember when Rob, when I was at Ohio, had done a survey for us. And I remember him overlaying our data on our peer institutions, our aspirational institutions, and then just a litany of other institutions. But the aha moment for me was that all across the country, no matter what type of institution it was, public, private, small liberal arts, or large, you know, public or private institution, that most of the alumni really wanted the same thing. There were a couple of variances, of course, but for the most part, and that was a big aha moment for me. You know, and then as you had alluded to earlier, we started to program that way. But you know, it was based, instead of planning in a vacuum, instead of guessing what alumni wanted, you know, we used that empirical data to start planning, and we saw quickly differences in engagement and in some cases differences in numbers, but you know, just it was it really gave us a line to plan by.
Absolutely, and as you know, we did the Performance Enhancement Group study here at East Carolina too, and it is eye opening. And you know, it's eye opening, and yet at the same time makes complete sense. Once you take a step back and you get a chance to look at the analysis of alumni wants and needs, it really allowed us to focus our alumni programs here at East Carolina on the areas that could have the greatest impact on behalf of our alumni. And so I agree with you. We had that aha moment a number of years ago when we did that study. Mike, let me shift gears on you a little bit. I know you are a student of the profession also. I know you're an avid reader and always looking to find out, well, you know, what the latest trends are. President Obama recently came out with a proposal that would restrict the tax deductibility of gifts to the to those Americans who are the most affluent, making gifts to philanthropic endeavors. And that could potentially have an impact on what we do in higher education. Essentially, what the proposal says is that they would not be able to claim on their taxes their gifts to nonprofit corporations. What's your perspective on that?
Well, I'm hoping that obviously doesn't move along any further. And some folks that I've talked to recently said, you know, it seems to not be gaining any momentum on the congressional side. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but I know that in all the studies that I've ever seen, tax benefits are usually pretty far down the list of as to the reasons why people give. Now, that's singular in purpose. If you had multi reasons why people give, i.e., they gave because they wanted to make a difference, and then the second reason was a tax reason, that would probably be more apparent to, you know, find out if that would have a causal effect. But I guess my first belief would be that, you know, anything that you throw in the way to impede a gift is going to certainly slow it down. I hope it doesn't pass, and I hope it doesn't gain any more momentum.
Recently, in the Chronicle of Philanthropy, they did a survey on wealthy Americans, in response to this proposal. And what they found out was that nearly 52% of wealthy donors said their giving would remain the same if they no longer received the income tax deduction. So you're right on point with that. My concern is the other 48% that say it would affect, because that's a significant minority that would say that policies like this would have some impact. And so it's good to see that most wealthy donors, or at least a majority of wealthy donors, would not let it impact it. But to echo what you're saying, I think it could be something that would that we would feel.
Well, I think it goes down to even the very basics. I mean, you never want to try to slow down, you know, or, you know, put a challenge or a hurdle in front of someone giving. We even do that online with our online giving. You want to prevent as many clicks as possible, right? Just to make sure that gift goes all the way through to the, and that would be the very elemental side of it. But from a bigger perspective, most campaigns, they say that 10% of your alumni or 10% of the total comes from. I'm sorry. Most of the gifts come from 10% of the alumni, is what I was trying to say.
Right.
And friends for the campaign. So. That would be the argument that you would make, that it might not have that much effect. But where I think it would have an effect is in 48% that you mentioned, which, again, I haven't read that article, but going back to the Indiana University Center of Philanthropy study that we talked about earlier, those gifts start, at some point. So if those people are concerned with it and they're not giving early on, that certainly could have a long-term effect.
We're talking with Mike Worley, the Executive Director for Regional Programs at Washington University in St. Louis. So, Mike, as we wrap up our conversation today, I know you're very active in CASE and in District 5. What can you tell folks about the District 5 conference that you're playing a role in planning? I know I was there this past year and had the opportunity to present in the pre-conference and had a great time. You guys always put on an excellent conference every December in Chicago. Tell folks who may not be familiar with the District 5 conference and your involvement in that.
Well, we hold the District 5 conference each December in Chicago at the Sheraton Hotel and Towers. And I was the chair last year and newcomer's chair, which I enjoy very much, and trying to impart anything to our new professionals in the business. Interestingly, I just got our surveys back yesterday from CASE International, and it was the remarks were just great. It was a really great experience, and we had some phenomenal speakers last year. Obviously, planning for this December, we're a little bit worried about people's travel budgets and trying to plan accordingly. But we're going to my co-partner in the development track, Martin Bailey at University of Michigan. We're trying to plan without the doom and gloom. I'm sure we're going to address some of the economy issues, but we are going to really try to keep a positive approach to this. But we're really looking forward to it. It'll be in December, the same weekend as, and I don't have those dates in front of me, we'll be in December at the Sheraton Hotel and Towers there in Chicago, should be a good conference.
Great. Well, if you're listening to this podcast and you live in District 5, you certainly want to check out the information on the CASE District 5 conference that they hold every year in Chicago. Well, Mike, thanks for joining us. I appreciate you spending some time with us and allowing us to pass your thoughts on through our podcast. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Paul.
Again, thanks for listening to the Impact Alumni Podcast. You can find us at www.alumnipodcast.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter by searching for the Impact Alumni Podcast. Thanks again to Mike Worley for being our guest, and until next time, take care.